Today's guest will travel to Poland for a seminar next year in 2019. Hannah Brannigan, a host of wonderful podcast Drinking from the Toilet and one of the biggest inspiration for me to do this program. We'll talk about schedules of reinforcement. Stay with us and listen and share it. Comment if you want to ask something. So the topic is schedule of reinforcement. And do we have to turn to intermittent schedule quickly after we teach the behavior and stop using continuous schedule to strengthen actually the behavior and make it more resistant to extinction? Because basically there are so many researches about reinforcement schedules, so many actually done in laboratories. There are not a lot of done with dog training, especially sports dog training. And very often these research, they say that when you teach a behavior, you should start with obviously continuous schedule. So every behavior, every repetition gets one treat or a toy, whatever. And after you go through the learning phase and you're in the maintenance phase, you should quickly go into intermittent schedules and variable schedules. So do you think this is actually true for sports dog training when we want very strict criteria, very precise behaviors, and we don't want any variety among repetitions?
I mean, I think you summarize it right there. You hit all the main points that I normally make when I'm having this conversation/argument. So it's short answer. Should we or do we have to go to an intermittent schedule of any kind? And we can talk about different options for intermittent schedules, but the short answer is no. I feel very strongly that our behaviors, that as trainers, we are best served with ultimately a continuous schedule of reinforcement. Mm-hmm. So I think if we're going to talk about it, and I don't know like how much exposure your audience has had or will have had to the terms, I think that half of the problem is we get tangled up a little bit in the words that we're using to describe the concepts. And then also, you know, drawing really kind of false parallels between what we think we're doing and what we're actually doing. Yes. So we can, there's some gaps there. So, and I think the first thing that we need to be really clearly defining is that in the scientific literature, going back to Skinner, so a long time ago now, right? Decades and decades. The concept of a schedule of reinforcement is only ever applied to a finished behavior. So that's like a really big critical component. So one of my kind of practical observations is that, first of all, if we are approaching a dog training problem with the goal of putting this on a variable reinforcement schedule of any kind, any kind of intermittent reinforcement schedule, we're always going to jump the gun. And we start talking about reinforcement schedules way before anything that a behavioral scientist would consider a finished behavior. Right?
Absolutely, yes.
So we're trying to put a behavior that's not even fluent on an intermittent schedule, and we're going to get
different behaviors.
We're going to get a lot of stuff. And then what's also really interesting is even if you have a discrete, finished, defined behavior, even in the laboratory, they got variability. And that's something that is, I think, a lot of dog trainers don't necessarily aren't aware of or don't recognize. Mm-hmm. It's just that if your measurement of the behavior is the bar pressing, right?
Yeah.
The chicken, the pigeon pecking the key, pecking the button. The button only requires a certain amount of pecking for it to trigger, but it doesn't matter so much if you peck it like slightly to the left or slightly to the right or slightly lower. So even with that super controlled environment inside the Skinner box or in the pigeon's cage, where everything is the same, they still saw variability in the behavior. They just didn't care.
Yes, and they often didn't care about if it was the right paw or left paw. Like the rat could only just the task was to press, the behavior was press the letter. So this is something we wouldn't want in duck training, actually.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's, I mean, we can, it's repeatable, it's observable in multiple species. There's, if you're familiar with Dr. Jesus Rosales Ruiz, yep. So he has his portal experiments, which I love looking at.
Amazing. Yes.
Fascinating. And so with the portal, P-O-R-T-A-L, which is, it's an acronym for something. I forget exactly
what. It's portable operant,
yeah.
Research. Oh God, I forget it because I will. But right. It's something about laboratory and portable and research.
Right. So what I love about this, and I mean, it's a serious research tool, but it's also a game.
Yeah.
And it takes this, like the old clicker training shaping game that we used to play with people and still play, and we put it in this tabletop format. With a rule structure that lets us basically put people inside a Skinner box, except for the Skinner box is you're sitting in a chair at a table, and you've got you've got some toys in front of you. So you may have like a dinosaur toy and a car and a chair and a Lego piece, and then they can use this as a model to test different theories that we have in behavior in general and teaching and learning. And the really cool part is that since the subjects are people, we can then ask them questions
what did you learn?
Right. We can ask, what did you think you were being reinforced for? And we can compare that to the video of what actually was happening. And we can ask them, how did you feel? How did you describe that? And so he's got a series of videos that I've seen, I can't remember where he showed them, but of exploring this exact topic, like looking at a behavior, a trained behavior that had been on a continuous schedule of reinforcement until it was consistent, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever our definition of fluency is there. So 15 times in, set amount of time, or once every second or whatever. So we've got a continuous schedule of reinforcement. And then they take the subject and they put them on a variable schedule, so intermittent reinforcement of, I want to say like 3.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So still pretty low number. So from continuous schedule means we reinforce every behavior, every single time. So every time the dog sits, we feed, the dog sits, we feed, the dog sits, we feed. And then an intermittent schedule, a variable schedule, a variable ratio like of 3, we would reinforce every third sit. So you sit 1, 2, 3, you get the food. So in this context, they take the person is touching the target every time and gets a reinforcement. And now they reinforce every third time, which you wouldn't think would be that big of a leap.
Yeah, it's just a 3 repetitions.
Right. It's just 3 of the same thing. They've just done that, 100 times or whatever. And what's really interesting is on the video, it becomes very, very clear. They touch on that very first time of they're waiting for the third one. They touch the target, so they're repeating the behavior they're just reinforced for. Mm-hmm. Then they touch the target in a different way. So maybe they pick it up or they touch it with a different finger or they roll it over. And if that doesn't get reinforced, the very next thing they do is put the target down, they go touch something else on the table.
Yeah. And just they touch 3. Something.
Right. At just 3. And then they come back and they touch the target, and that's the third one, so they get the reinforcement. And so they go through this, multiple times. And what was fascinating to me, so that was interesting. But not unexpected, because that matches my observations with working with non-human animals.
Okay. Yes.
So then after the session, they ask the people to describe how they felt on the variable schedule. And the expectation that I hear a lot from dog trainers is when we put them on a variable schedule, it makes the training more exciting. The unpredictability motivates the dog because they're more excited. Yeah. And so we get a higher rate of responses. We get a higher rate of behavior. The dog is more motivated. They're more excited. They're more enthusiastic because of that unpredictability feature. But when we ask the people in a similar training setting, how did you feel? Nobody said they felt excited. Most of them on the continuous schedule said that they felt confident.
Okay.
Right. And then when they questioned them on the variable schedule, the most frequent response was confused.
Okay. It was confused.
Yeah.
And not, was there a frustration or mostly they were
I'm trying to remember if frustration was an option. I think it was like a multiple choice, which of these most closely matches how you felt. But like far and away, the most common response was they felt confused. Okay, nobody said they felt excited. Yeah.
Because this is what people, because I often think that people mistake actually what is reinforcement. And when they say they put behavior on a variable schedule, they often mean they changed the reinforcement.
Yes.
And the dog still gets something. And for example, if it's often about recall on during the walks.
And
because you call a dog when you have a puppy, you teach the recall, you feed after every time your dog comes back to you. And then slowly you start to change this reinforcement, the food reinforcement, to social reinforcement, to sometimes you use a pre-mac principle.
Right.
And this is not changing the schedule of reinforcement, actually.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's just a change in reinforcement type. It's usually use a secondary reinforcement, but it's still every repetition is reinforced.
And we could, exactly. Yeah. And I think this is actually a fantastic strategy. And that's the strategy that I recommend that we take. And it can manifest in many different forms, right? But what you're describing is exactly right. We can have a continuous reinforcement schedule. So every single response gets reinforced in some way.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to be the same way. And this is where we get into opinion, but it's like an educated opinion where I have anecdotal evidence, which is not the same thing as controlled scientific study. But my observational opinion is that when we take that exact approach, what you're describing right there, sometimes you do the behavior and it gets you access to food. Yeah. Sometimes you do the behavior and it gets you access to social interaction. Sometimes you do the behavior, you get tactile, pleasant touching and petting and feeding. And sometimes you do the behavior and you get to go outside or you get to do some other behavior that you really want
swimming.
To do. Swimming, roll in the mud. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And when that behavior is associated with getting access to a variety of different reinforcers, it is my observation that those are our strongest behaviors, that those are the behaviors that are most likely to show up in other situations.
Actually, I think it's not only the observation, because recently I have to go and dig this article, because there was a scientific article about variety of reinforcement and how it influences the behavior. Definitely there is one. And because I recently on my studies, I was reading it, I mean recently, a few months ago, I had to look for it. And because definitely it was something that struck me, like, so there, it influences a lot of behavior when you use a different type of reinforcement. This behavior is much stronger.
Mm-hmm. And I think it makes sense. Like we tend to have... Yeah, if you find that article, I'd love to see it. Send that to me, I'd love to read it.
Okay.
But it's I think intuitively it makes sense, because we just in everyday life, me and you humans, we have a repertoire of kind of all-purpose behaviors that frequently get us access to things that we want, like pushing and pulling, right? If I'm faced with a door, I'm going to try pushing. And if that doesn't work, I'll try pulling. And that's a good thing to try on doors in general. So if I go to a different door, I'm going to try one of those behaviors from the repertoire, whether I'm going to the library, the grocery store, bathroom, whatever.
And reinforcement is not always the same.
Right. There's lots of things to be on the other side.
Shouldn't be.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's exactly, it's I think this is something we should remember when we are working with dogs. And especially when you do the sports training, you don't really want, because in an example with recall, even if we had used the variable schedule, we are not so concerned about the exact same repetition. I mean, you really don't care during the walk if your dog is coming to your left or to your right, or what pace is he going to. Mm-hmm. I mean, you usually want a fast pace when you're calling your dog, but you're not really concerned about the exact parameters of the behavior. You just want an overall recall, right? And so if you put this behavior on a variable schedule, even if you don't use any kind of reinforcements, let's say, but it's highly, it's unlikely possible to not use reinforcement for recall. But if you don't, then even if this behavior is starting to change, some parameters are starting to change, you really don't care that much.
Right. You have a pretty loose definition for precision for that particular behavior. And I think that's a good point, because there are, you know, if your only real criterion is proximity to the trainer, you know, come within, you know, arm's length of me while I'm standing here. You could even add, and let me touch your collar, right? Which could be more specific. That's how when I teach my pet dog classes, that's how we define the recall, is I have to be able to touch your collar for the recall to be considered successful. Otherwise, having a border collie just circle you indefinitely doesn't actually solve the problem. Okay. But they will. So, you know, then we have that whole space of how they get to that endpoint, which the dog could do many things in that. And what the dog does do in that space between when they hear the cue and when you touch their collar, I'll just use that as a very concrete endpoint. So between when they're sniffing around in the woods and you say, "Brownie, come," and then you are now touching the collar, mark and reinforce, how Brownie, whatever Brownie did in that time is going to be reinforced as part of that behavior cycle, right? So what if he did a zigzag where he peed on two bushes and then came to you, that's going to get reinforced. That is, of course, not really my ideal performance. So I would probably put a little more criteria on that personally. And I would look at something like, maybe I should reduce the distance so that there's less opportunity for this, but I'm getting sidetracked. My point being that you know, all of that variability gets reinforced when we reinforce the endpoint. And so we get a wide range of performance that we might see on that particular cue. And in a casual situation, like I'm hiking in the woods and I just want my dogs to check in and then I send them out again or whatever, that's fine. Like it meets my practical needs in that context. And that's actually okay. So I don't want to make it sound like that's somehow.
Yeah, but it's still, it's
hard. Not acceptable. Yeah.
But still, you're using reinforcement. I mean, I'm having a hard time to actually imagine a situation when we would not use any kind of reinforcement. Because if you're just calling your dogs for, you know, to check in with you, then releasing them back to the environment is still reinforcing.
Actually reinforcing. Yep. It's there's actually a quote from Ken Ramirez that I just recently, I was just making my social media posts for the next month, and it was one I added in there. So it's like fresh in my mind, where, and now of course, except I've forgotten the exact quote, so I'm going to butcher it, but the quote is, you know, every interaction we have with an animal is reinforcing some behavior in some way, either positively or negatively. So we always have to ask ourselves, what are we training? If you give the cue, the dog performs the behavior. If anything about you changes, you touch the dog, you move away from the dog, where you look, our eye contact can be reinforcing for some dogs. It can be punishing for some dogs, or negatively reinforcing. So, there is no neutral, in that setting, I think. And I think you're right. Like there's some, whatever happens, something has changed and it can influence the behavior one way or the other.
Yeah.
So it is to our practical benefit to plan what that's going to be. I'm going to do something when my dog comes in. If this is a behavior I want to reinforce, I want to make sure that whatever it is that I do is reinforcing that behavior in some way, because I really, neutral is like, almost doesn't exist. Like it's an idealized.
Maybe in the laboratory or maybe in a shaping session when you have nothing actually around you that the dog can do instead of offer behaviors.
And if there's if you have a clearly defined like neutral home position, which you're exactly right. Like in a shaping session, that's an important thing that we want to include in a shaping session is what does my home position look like? So for me, that's going to be clicker and treat hand in my lap. In that particular very specific context, the dog can perform a behavior and I can make no change.
Yeah. Yeah, but sometimes you have to be careful because very often dogs may find something on the in the environment.
And, oh, yes.
Yeah. And it happens.
Yes.
So then it's not neutral.
Right.
So if you
well, want I may still be neutral, but then I'm not the only thing controlling reinforcement.
Exactly.
For that,
it's that it's behavior, like we have to remember that we don't choose reinforcement.
Yes.
And if you want to use extinction, then you have to be careful about many things. But with reinforcement, that it doesn't always comes from you. It doesn't come from you. Right. That reinforcement can come from many other places, and you may think you use extinction, but actually the behavior is being reinforced in some other way. So you're not withdrawing reinforcement, you're actually changing it.
You're potentially changing it and also potentially chaining it.
Oh, yes.
If you're in the situation of, well, I'm going to wait for the dog to stop doing behavior A, then we'll reinforce him when he does behavior B, and he does behavior A, behavior A, behavior A, behavior B. Great, click and treat. I maybe reinforce behavior B, but I have also reinforced the sequence of doing A, and then B.
Exactly.
And I will, and I am currently living through a small behavior chain like that with one of my dogs that I'm undoing.
Okay.
And it's actually one that will resonate with you. I have accidentally chained a small little foot movement into my position changes.
Oh.
Yep. So it's a tiny movement. I'm trying to eliminate it. Mm-hmm. I was one of those things. I didn't catch it when it first happened. It got built into the behavior as just this little tiny foot movement. And after reinforcing it, I don't even know, probably a dozen times or so.
Oh.
Yep. Now I've got it. So I'm having to go, you know, find a way to short circuit that, but that is one of those things that, that happened accidentally. I wasn't trying to put the behavior on a variable schedule, or reinforce intermittently. I was trying to reinforce the correct behavior continuously. I just missed a little movement because of the angle I was looking at my dog. I just couldn't see it was happening until it got bigger. Okay. And now, of course, it's hindsight's 20/20. I can see it in the video, like there's a spotlight on it.
I have the same example. Yes, positions, and unfortunately, I have this little tap with a hind leg, and it's not something I would want, and this was not something I reinforced deliberately, but it's there.
Right. Right. That's that little, it's just this little, tiniest little paw reset move that I'm just agonizing over. But yeah, like that's where we get the variable behavior. Mm-hmm. And I think, and that's even when we're trying to, which is one of the reasons why I just don't think that we should emphasize intermittent schedules of reinforcement in practical dog training purposes, because we're already reinforcing intermittently. Like we're already occasionally missing clicks. We're already occasionally having crappy timing, and we're already paying the price with these little behaviors. Yeah. Problems that'll creep in. And so it's nothing that I think emphasizing fluency in the behavior that you're trying to train is far more important, because most of the time what people are looking to solve when they start asking questions about intermittent reinforcement schedules, they're really trying to solve a fluency problem.
Yeah.
The dog isn't performing a behavior under certain conditions, and it's not caused by a scheduled reinforcement. It's caused by a deficit in fluency in the first place. The dog was, that behavior was never truly fluent, and it just showed up when we made some changes to conditions. Mm-hmm. And so the real answer is, well, then I need to create a training plan to train this behavior to fluency under a lot of different conditions. So I need to generalize the behavior. I need to make sure that it's truly fluent. It's actually on the cue that I think it's on. I've not been making some small body movement or doing something to prompt the behavior that became part of the cue. And then when I changed conditions or I added distance to it or I took it into the competition ring, the behavior disappeared because it wasn't fluent or because it was, there was some little residual prompt that I was doing that's now gone. Those are by far, I think, those are the bigger problems we need to solve. And those are solved by using a continuous schedule of reinforcement, but with a really close eye to clean training, to maintaining specific criteria and shaping the behavior that we want to see, which is not the same thing as an intermittent schedule.
Absolutely. And do you think, because very often people ask if keeping the behavior on a continuous schedule will make it less resistant to extinction?
And that is an excellent question.
Yeah. Because, thank you. Because what I noticed, what people ask sometimes is that if they go to a obedience competition, for example, they will not reinforce because this will be a chain of behaviors. And I think they're mixing actually terms, because chain of behaviors and putting behavior on extinction, it's absolutely a different thing. It's not like in chain you have one response after another, and this is not putting a behavior on extinction, because each response is actually a stimuli and a secondary reinforcement for the previous response. So this is not putting a behavior on extinction. But I just asked two questions, but okay. So
it's easy to get excited. I get very excited about these things myself.
Okay, so back to the first question. Extinction. And is the behavior on a continuous schedule more less resistant to extinction?
So when we look at the laboratory research, it appears that yes, a variable schedule does seem to be more resistant to extinction if, and this is a big qualifier, you have shaped the behavior to that degree. So you can't just take a behavior that's been on a continuous reinforcement schedule. You can't just take a behavior, even a simple behavior like the pigeon pecking the button, and it's been reinforced every time, and then suddenly reinforce the 100th peck. Like, you can't put them on an intermittent schedule, variable schedule of 100. The pigeon won't do it. So what you have to do is teach the pigeon to peck two times to get the reinforcement, and then three times to get the reinforcement, and four times. So you have to shape the variable ratio. And then the other thing that really matters, that I think, again, is the turning point for us as dog trainers in the real world, especially in a competition setting, the pigeon can't be able to tell the difference. Mm-hmm. Everything has to be the same. And that is not true when we compare a training session to a dog show.
Absolutely.
We all know there are massive context cue differences between a real dog show that we cannot replicate in training.
Absolutely. And like hundreds of other dogs.
Like hundreds of other dogs. Like, everybody's really stressed out. Like, we just stayed in a hotel.
Yes.
There's so many cues that are present that are telling the dog that we are now under different conditions and there will be different rules for reinforcement.
Absolutely.
So it would be as if, one of the examples that people, all of us use when we're talking about the variable schedule reinforcement, we always use that slot machine analogy, right? So the reason that slot machines work is that you can't tell when you pull the lever is if this is going to pay off or not.
Exactly. Then you wouldn't pull
If you could tell, it wouldn't work. So if all of the slot machines that had the lights on would potentially pay off, and all the slot machines that had the lights turned off weren't going to pay off, you would very quickly learn not to pull the lever on the lights off slot machines. You would be able to tell that discrimination.
Wouldn't work exactly well.
Yeah. So what we're creating that no matter what we do in training, there's always going to be quite clear that under this specific, in the specific context, under these conditions, when there's hundreds of other dogs, my mom hasn't taken a breath in 3 minutes and there's all, we've been crated and I'm in my special crate and we stayed in the hotel and we drove for 4 hours or whatever. There's always stuff that is going to be different than a normal day-to-day training session. And it's going to be just as like turning the lights off on the slot machine.
Exactly.
So we can't count on that variable schedule to give us the resistance to extinction. If that's what we're focusing all of our effort on, it's not going to work because the lights are turned off.
Exactly. Oh, that's such a great explanation, because this is, I think, what people are missing very often, that you can't tell you shouldn't tell the difference for this to work. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. It's because we think that a dog, because I think actually this whole problem with intermittent schedules is very often a focus for beginners and people who start working with dogs, and they want to know when they can put the treat away. So the dog can work just because there is a cue.
Yeah.
And the dog will work, which is something that does not exist in a sport training. And
yes, yeah,
this is something absolutely different and different from what we want. And especially in even in an everyday life, you will still reinforce the behavior one way or another.
Yeah.
So
we only do behaviors if there's reinforcement. That's the yeah. biology of why behavior exists, is to get outcomes. If those outcomes stop working, we stop doing the behaviors eventually. This is behavior of any organism, exactly. from worm to giraffe and everything in between. Like, that's why we have behavior. Otherwise it would be pointless. It would just, yeah. it would be a waste of energy. Yeah. So there's something functioning there. Otherwise there would be no behavior. And I think we have a couple of questions. There's the what works for training, which mm-hmm. we have good science and we have evidence for. Yeah. And then there's our kind of weird cultural, mm-hmm. psychological opinions that some reinforcements are more virtuous than others.
Yeah.
that for whatever reason, a food or a toy, so food, of course, is the most disrespectful form of reinforcement.
Because to bribe.
right. And not everybody uses this language, but it is implied that food is the least impressive form of reinforcement. If you're using food, like, you're down here, yeah. and then toys are a little bit better. If you can get a dog to work for toys without food, you seem to be a little bit better of a trainer.
Okay. That's so interesting.
The behavior is a little more virtuous. And then if you can get the dog to work just for your social approval, that's ideal.
Okay.
This is not my opinion. This just seems to be what gets reflected to me. Well, you know, when can I use a toy for this instead soon? Or, you know, when can I do this for just petting? But it is fairly narrow view of what reinforcement is, but also there are unnecessary value judgments there that don't benefit our training.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, people are, with what you said about food and toys, these are just two types of reinforcement. Right. And they are also, reinforcement is defined by its function. So very often they are not reinforcing. It's like giving a dog a treat and the behavior is not repeating itself in future. It means this is just the food you are giving. You're not reinforcing the behavior. And this is something we also forget, that sometimes it's not about just the choice between food or toy. It's that we have also other options, and reinforcement comes in a variety of situations actually in life.
And yes.
An environment, and also what we do. Social reinforcement, yes, but also reinforcement in the dog's environment.
Yes.
Not actually delivered by us, which we
right.
don't really like sometimes.
right. No, that is definitely, I think, one of the hardest things to accept is that some of the time in our dogs' lives, we just aren't that relevant.
Yeah.
but in what the reinforcers we can control in that moment just aren't the most important to the dog. And if you have a full bladder, it does not matter how much money your boss is offering you. The most important thing for you to do in that moment is to relieve that biological need. And sometimes we end up at cross purposes with our dog's biological needs, which can be problematic from a training perspective. But it is what it is. That's life with dogs. So we have to work with that. I think that's one of those things where yes, expanding our understanding of what reinforcement mm-hmm. means. And that's also where I tend to lose patience with arguments about whether something's a primary or secondary or tertiary reinforcer or whatever, mm-hmm. because it doesn't matter to a certain extent. Like, it's what do you need? Like, what's the purpose of that behavior? That's the primary reinforcement for that behavior in that moment.
Exactly. And when we talk about intermittent schedule of reinforcement, there is not information on any of the studies about if it has to be a primary reinforcement. It's just a reinforcement, so it can be a secondary or tertiary or whatever reinforcement type you can use, actually.
Right.
So
that's it's an arbitrary allocation by humans.
Yeah, that it has to be a primary reinforcement. So when you take away the treats, you're not reinforcing the behavior or toy.
Which I think, I mean, that's a good place to kind of circle back around to the second half of your point with regards to behavior change.
Yes, because, I wanted to ask you that.
Because that is, again, overlooked. Mm-hmm. So if we just let's push the idea of whether something is arbitrarily primary, secondary reinforcement off to one side, because it doesn't really matter. And look at reinforcement in general as a function of behavior. When you have a conditioned stream of behaviors, like a sequence of behaviors that you have learned to perform in order, and that sequence of behavior has been reinforced, the continuation of the sequence is reinforcing.
Yes, absolutely. It's like when you open a window because it's hot out inside and you want to open a window, then the sequence of what you're doing, you're reaching by your hand, you can grab the handle and open the window. It's all reinforcing each other, because if you were unable to open the window, then you actually would punish the act of grabbing the handle. So the chains are reinforcing.
Yes.
Inside. You don't need the last repetition. The last behavior is reinforced by the reinforcement, can be reinforced actually by the secondary or primary reinforcement at the end.
Right. But
the behavior chain is not extinction of the behaviors.
Right. Yes. The chain. And it is, you know, that this does depend on the assumption that the chain is conditioned. Like it has to be a learned chain just giving a series of cues in a row doesn't make that happen necessarily. But if you have, you know, the behavior change that we are most familiar with, even though we don't think about them, because they tend to be kind of, you know, unconscious behavior chains of stuff that we do. I think all of us have had the experience of being interrupted from some routine that we were trying to complete and feeling the irritation of not being able to complete the chain.
Absolutely.
But it is because we had that expectation of each step on the chain leading us closer to whatever that desired outcome is. So getting the window open, the desired outcome is the, you know, negative reinforcement of, you know, being cooler.
Yeah.
And if you go to open you flip the latch on the window and you go to push and it's stuck, then you feel that frustration, you're in extinction. I'm being denied my access to the reinforcer that I wanted, which was the, you know, the air. Where was I going with that? But if you did not have that experience of performing that sequence of behaviors to get access to that reinforcer in your learning history, then it wouldn't work as a chain that way. Like that, it would not be as powerful. And then, of course, the longer you've had that expectation, then that this sequence of behaviors leads to the outcome, the function, the reinforcer that I'm looking for. The more powerful that those reinforcing effects are going to be as you continue to perform the sequence.
Yes, because you know what's coming.
Right.
And you know that if you're going to just do what you should do in this sequence, then the reinforcement will come.
Right.
So the problem with chains when they're actually not happening during, for example, trial, it's not a problem with those behavior being put on extinction trial, but because we have not trained them to fluency.
Usually, yeah. I think that
there are many other possibilities.
There are kind of three. I think there are three big categories that I look at for when I'm problem solving this. The first and the largest one is, was the behavior fluent in the first place? And
that's usually
where the problem is. The second one is, were the cues produced in a way to allow the continuous flow of behaviors?
Mm-hmm.
And for cues that the humans control, sometimes the answer is no. Like you get distracted, but especially between exercises where chains tend to break in a performance situation. So, you know, as you've just taken the dumbbell back and you're moving to the next exercise and you look away from the dog and the dog's left standing there for a second, and the chain breaks at that point, you may restart a new chain at your new starting point. But particularly, I think for new handlers, and I don't have as much experience with what your competition sports look like, just on a routine basis. But in obedience, where I compete, the judge is telling you when to go to different places, and so it is very easy. Okay, so it's very easy for a particularly a green, a novice handler to stop giving cues to the dog, look to the judge to hear what the judge is saying. And so we, you know, we essentially break the connection. We've broken the chain, and then we've created this gap, and then we turn back to the dog. In the meantime, we're no longer giving the dog that continuous flow of behaviors to maintain that chain. We can do the same thing in agility, which you'd think would be harder, but if we've gotten lost in an agility course, or we give a late cue or something happens, we can break the chain there and have the same kind of problem. So there's a handler skill there. And there's also, and there can even be environmental stuff. You know, I had a big frustration extinction problem with one of my older dogs when she was competing. She's retired now, but when she was competing, we had, for our scent discrimination exercise, there was just some confusion with the steward, the volunteer who was supposed to be setting up the exercise, and we had a break in the chain. And we did have an extinction moment there, and it created some frustration, which as a Belgian, she, it manifested as barking.
That's not surprising.
That was also very frustrating. Put my behavior into a punishment extinction situation, but we eventually solved it. So in that case, even if my cues have been perfect, there were other variables in the environment that caused her to not be able to continue to perform her stream of behaviors. I now train for those sorts of things so that
the part of the chain, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind
of brings us to like the third thing that I look for is, have we shaped their performance as a chain to the degree that we need to? Which would be kind of the third thing that I would look for. In that case, that was the bigger problem. I didn't have enough duration on that sort of intermediate behavior to allow for unexpected stuff to happen where there was a delay, which I now account for in
or
my
a question from a judge or
yes, exactly. Unexpected things. So I can build, and that's that whole thing, you know, it circles back to the very variability of how we reinforce, the variability of the type of reinforcement. So I can give her the cue to the next behavior, or there are two options. So, you know, the dog sits and I might cue a touch, or I might cue a stand and then a touch. And both of these are acceptable because they are both conditioned little chains of behavior. So in the example of the scent discrimination exercise, which has a lot of setup, it has a lot of delay. Mm-hmm. I can deliberately train my dog to maintain a sit-stay position basically for a variable amount of time. So that it's trained into there if there's a delay in getting the exercise
but
set
it
up.
Doesn't happen for the first time during the trial.
correct
At least it shouldn't.
And we always, that's the thing, it's, you know, we're training in performance and even in real life, we're training very complex behaviors in conditions that we can't fully control, so there are inevitably going to be surprises. And we learn and then we go back and train it better the next time. So it's just, okay, diagnostic information. I did not have enough duration on this intermediate behavior, and boy, I better train that before I go back in the ring again.
Okay. Yeah. So can we say that when someone asks if he's afraid of going to a trial because with a dog and starts obedience competition because he is afraid about withdrawing reinforcement, I would say this is not a problem of a trial, because in trial you are using different type of reinforcement.
You are. I think it is important to condition, to train. By condition, I mean train.
Yeah.
To train the dog to expect that sequence of behaviors, right? So that should be trained such that. You throw the dumbbell, the dog gets it, they return, you take the dumbbell, that whole sequence of behaviors leads to the reinforcement versus if I always reinforce the same point, right? So I need to train the sequence as a sequence. And also the other thing that I really want to make sure is that is my source of reinforcement a functional part of the cue for that behavior? So, is my action of, you know, reaching into my pocket and taking out a hot dog or a piece of food and then holding it and then giving the cue like that, the presence of that food becomes part of the cue. And I can account for that in my training. I can make sure that, you know, I can station my food on a chair in a different space than where we go. Then we go do the behavior, we perform a small sequence of behaviors, and we turn and take the food. Mm-hmm. So that is, it's going to still be part of the cue, but it's part of the cue that leads to the sequence compared to if I'm getting heel position by holding a treat in my hand and holding my hand in a particular spot. And then I suddenly, like, if I keep doing that, that's the cue to be healing. And then I try to do it with an empty hand, we're missing part of the cue.
Yeah.
We're going to lose the behavior.
Exactly. It's true. I think people are expecting sometimes too quick transitions from behavior that is being reinforced even by food and just small parts of this behavior being reinforced and then going to a full sequence.
Yes.
And this is something, and often they blame the schedules of reinforcement, and they say that because I was reinforcing those small steps, now my dog is expecting me to reinforce every single each part of the behavior. But it means something totally different. It means
The dog may be expecting to be reinforced in small pieces. That is still, the burden is still on us as trainers.
Exactly.
We need to start shaping increments of larger chunks of behavior. We don't do that by going from, you know, reinforcing every one to reinforcing 100.
Exactly. Yes, we need to find also some middle ground and each small steps to go to this full sequence. But also, I think that schedules of reinforcement are something that is not well explained to people who just start the dog training world, and they are not really showing where you should go with what does it mean to continuously reinforce. And it doesn't actually, like the whole our discussion today is not, it's not something wrong. It's not something you should be afraid of, and that reinforcement is everything around, actually. Mm-hmm. So I think we miss very much a clear explanation and a clear description what those schedules are, and people get a little bit mixed up with the terms.
They do, and I think that often when I hear someone say an intermittent schedule, a variable schedule, what they're really talking about is shaping.
Yeah.
They're really just shaping, and that's where I prefer to guide the language. So if we want more repetitions or longer duration or more distance of healing, rather than thinking about putting healing on an intermittent schedule, let's think about creating some shaping steps to shape duration of that response, to shape the duration of that behavior. And just it doesn't really make a difference on an outcome. Or it doesn't like it would look the same, however you describe it. But I think we're in a different kind of thought process if we're thinking about how can I shape duration of healing? How can I, how can I incrementally add steps to the healing compared to focusing on
reinforcing.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm continuously reinforcing. I'm just continuously raising criteria. In a way that makes sense, so that I'm building a longer performance.
Absolutely, because shaping is not just shaping a totally new behavior. You can actually shape within the topography of the behavior. So you can change some parameters of the behavior, and you use shaping very often. So if you want to increase the time or number of repetition, it's just shaping.
Right.
Which is, shaping is difficult. It's another story. But it's shaping, and it's not just putting a dog on extinction trial.
It's not, and I think that it's one of the things that I always think about is the fact that because behavior is dynamic, the behavior that we see in this moment is the result of this animal's learning history and environment for the last however many months, years, whatever. That's going to be a different picture than 2 weeks from now, which is going to be a different picture than 6 months from now. So it's never, when we started out this conversation, one of the points, which is why I always like to make it when I have this argument, conversation, is that we can only talk about intermittent or continuous schedules of reinforcement with a finished behavior.
Yes.
Most of the time, we don't have finished behaviors because it's a constantly dynamic process. The behavior is changing. The environment is reinforcing. The conditions are changing. We're never in this static maintenance situation where everything is exactly the same and nothing ever changes. It's always changing. So we're really always shaping. So we really should always be using a continuous schedule, but varying how we reinforce.
Yes. And I think because behavior is changing, it's actually important to keep it on this continuous schedule. Because,
to keep it, keeping a shaping mindset. Yeah.
Exactly. Because I don't know, when I think right now about any behavior, I can say it's finished. No.
No.
I don't even want to think about any, because then it's going to change tomorrow, probably. But every behavior I taught and I thought it was finished, it was not. Like a week after, something has changed. Something that I was teaching my dog, for example, let's say I was teaching healing, and the healing was a finished behavior. It's impossible, but okay.
Particularly healing, yes.
Yeah, it was perfect. It was finished behavior. And then I started to teach positions under march, and my healing changed because it was influenced by something I did with a different behavior. And now I have to bring back the healing to the previous state, and the maintaining space, where in laboratories they say you should use actually a variable reinforcement for a maintaining space where behavior is learned, they mean exactly as you said, a finished behavior.
Right.
And usually they are not teaching a rat or a pigeon so many different behaviors like we do to our dogs.
They don't teach
healing, go around the cone, send articles, and distance control, many, many different behaviors, the same dog. I think this is a completely different story.
Yes. Yeah. I think you're right. It's really the staying in a shaping mindset so that we don't get fall into the trap of the behavior drifting from what we originally wanted, because the conditions are always changing. I mean, even no matter how good a job I think that I've done in like my adult, like my 9-year old dog, there's something now that I'm a little bit further along in my training journey, I'll notice, you know, I really wish I had that little foot movement. Straightened out. I really wish I didn't have that. So, you know, now I'm shaping for that. So it's never finished. We're always adding things to it. We're always generalizing. And the behavior is always changing because there are so many variables outside of our control, even outside of a training session.
Exactly. That's what I wanted to say. Because sometimes we go for a walk and everyday life, and something changes in a dog's world. Something, he learns something new. He gets new skills. And some environmental cues in our training session will bring back the behavior that he learned. This may influence our training session.
Right.
So, again, we are not having a final product with the behavior we thought we were. Yeah. So we need to just shape it.
Yeah.
Again, so and again,
always,
and again,
always,
and again.
Yeah, always cycling back to differentially reinforcing for the criteria that we want to see with the behavior.
This is fascinating about dog training, about animal, any training.
And I know. That's what makes it fun. That's what keeps it interesting. Because what would we do if we just finished it?
Finished healing. I mean, how can you do it? It's like, you don't finish healing.
No. Never happened to me.
No. No, this is too complex. And often we're not talking about some simple behaviors. We're talking about very complex behaviors that you need to have every single, because in sports training, we mostly, in competition, we use chains or sequences of behaviors.
Yeah.
And because I can't think of any example of a single behavior you're supposed to do in a competition. They're usually chained.
And And I mean, really, behavior doesn't occur in nature as like an individual discrete unit either. Yeah. We're always performing a continuous stream of behaviors. We talk about breaking them out because that's the only way that we can communicate about them. But, you know, like right now I'm doing a bunch of different behaviors. I'm talking, I'm breathing, I'm sitting in a chair, I'm waving my arm. I'm shifting my weight occasionally. Like, so I'm doing this continuous stream of multiple behaviors. Which of these is being reinforced? I don't even know. I don't like to spend too much time dwelling on my own reinforcers, but it can be uncomfortable, but But you know, the same thing, you know, the dog is breathing, they're standing, they're sitting, they're moving, they're trotting, they're dropping their head, they're wagging their tail, they're lifting, like there are so many movements and actions and just biological processes that are all occurring that if it, you can make yourself a little crazy, which I do, which I still think makes it fun, but, but it's, we can't escape, we can't escape the fact that that's how behavior occurs. That's how it works. We really never have just one little piece of behavior that's completely independent of everything else. It just doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't happen. And this is what we should be aware of and consider this, that there is nothing wrong with using treats. But I think it's the same here in Poland that treats are, I often get a question from people, how can I teach my dog to use toys as a reinforcement? Because food is like a lower, exactly as you said, when I think about this right now, it's like food is something wrong. And then you have a toy and then you have something else, a social reinforcement. But I think we actually shouldn't be really concerned about what kind of reinforcement we use.
Yeah.
It should just work.
Right. First and foremost, let's talk about like practical, are we getting the behavior that we want?
Exactly.
And if it's working, then you know, then we're probably okay.
Yeah.
So getting too hung up on
how can I use a toy for this behavior?
Yeah. It's
really helpful.
If your personal worth is wrapped up in whether or not your dog will do obedience behaviors to play with you, then that's you have some problems, and we need to work those out. But that's beyond the scope of dog training.
Yes. Exactly. Absolutely. But yes, I think that we should just use what works. And because reinforcement is actually defined by its function.
It is. I mean, I think it is worth, as we were talking about, I think that there's a lot of value in strengthening behaviors with a variety of reinforcers. So I do think that there is value in deliberately cultivating multiple different reinforcers in the context of our formal training sessions. So food being one of them, different types of food, different types of food delivery, but then also toys, different types of toys, different types of toy delivery, and also tactile and social attention. Like those are all, we can have a lot of them, but it doesn't make one better than the other. Like it's not inherently more virtuous to have a dog that will work for a smile than a dog that will work for a piece of food. Each of those reinforcers will have different effects on the behavior because it bleeds forward. And so then it's just up to me, which of these reinforcement procedures is going to be the most beneficial to the effect I want to have on the behavior. Pick based on that. Pick based on what's going to have the best effect on your behavior, not on which one makes you feel better, because it's not about you.
Exactly. And then we can even, there is a topic about delivery of reinforcement, which is absolutely a different topic, but it's also very, very interesting. And so to sum up our discussion, we can say that actually the intermittent schedule is not as much of a big deal in dog training.
It's not magic.
It's not magic, and it's not a solution to have a strong behavior and to have a behavior that is fluent and to have a behavior that is repeatable in various conditions. You use different tools, not schedules of reinforcement.
Yep, we'll put schedule reinforcement on a shelf.
Yeah.
I don't really worry about it. We can exhaust all of these other options before we even pull that down off the shelf. And there may be a situation, I won't say always or never in dog training, there may be a situation where I would reach for that, but I'm going to look at fluency, stimulus control, all of those, and it's the whole antecedent picture. I'm going to look at all of those things first before I even look at the schedule of reinforcement.
Absolutely. Wow. Great. Thank you so much for this discussion.
Cool.
Really, I'm very grateful for you joining me today. I hope one day you will agree again.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be happy to. I can geek out about this stuff all day long. So
it's so interesting. I mean, you can actually really turn the topic around and go to other direction, because everything in this scientific world is so fascinating. And
it is. It's very cool.
Just, it's cool, and you can talk about it all the time, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Hannah. Really, I'm very happy to have you here, and thank you.
I don't need to introduce the next guest of our program. Susan Friedman will talk about labels and Unlabel Me in the next episode of the Doc Real Talk.